When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my longtime friend from work, who I haven't talked to on the show for a bit now, Kyle Sconewill.
Welcome back to
Kyle.
You.
Hey, thanks. I feel like the way this worked out, I'm trying to remember. I think we recorded an episode like the day before or 2 days before I went into surgery. So I guess we did it the best way possible to minimize the absence, but it still has felt like a long time.
Yes.
We and missed so, you. Hey, I miss being here. This is nice.
Me and our collective listenership missed you. Welcome back. Hey, we're all happy to hear you're doing well. It's improving.
Well,
that's good.
People have been, thanks everyone for reaching out. Y'all have been super nice. Coming up on 2 weeks since the surgery. I was just telling you off air, there are certain things that are going to last for a bit that are annoying. Like I'm still not technically allowed to drive, which is a real annoying thing for me. That stops on Thursday of this week, which is good. And the other thing is like for a month, I'm not supposed to lift anything over 5 pounds.
Which is really tough for your bodybuilding routine. You're normally
right.
You know.
I mean, it's like I feel like here's what you need to know, because I haven't yet gone shirtless since we've been doing video. But if you're just now tuning in for the first time on video, prior to the surgery, I was like neck and neck in this kind of literal arms race with Jonathan Majors, and then this has just really set me back. So.
I'll text him and tell him to give you a little grace. You know, you need a recovery period here. So.
He's just a brutal competitor, though. You know, fierce.
It's brutal.
So that aside, I've had a lot of downtime, which has been good. I'm kind of getting back into work now, getting back into podcasting, obviously. And then we've kind of got the second surgery coming up in a couple, I guess, like a month. One rib down, one to go. I had a ton of TV and movies that people have been recommending forever, and I finally had the opportunity to catch up on those.
Good.
And of course, instead of taking that opportunity, I just rewatched everything from Phase 4 again.
Oh, gosh.
That's not entirely true. I did finally get to catch up on a couple things. We started Dark, which is a show that I've had recommended to me a ton. Also, part of the reason we started that, James Tinian, who's a comic book writer, I've talked about some on the Patreon. He wrote is writing a really great comic called Something's Killing the Children. And the creators of Dark are partnering with Netflix to adapt that into a Netflix show.
I think I've seen that.
That's going to be really fun. But the other thing I finally got into Andor. I've been saying forever I was going to, and there was so much going on.
Yes.
I'm not finished yet. I've got 2 episodes left, but
do you like
it?
It
was like, it's so good.
Good.
The whole series, I feel like, has just been it feels to me just objectively like the best made Disney Plus series that I've seen.
Oh, like, hello.
Listen, it's not my favorite. I'm not that big of a Star Wars guy, especially not compared to like the MCU stuff, but just like, I think the closest thing I could compare it to production quality wise on Disney Plus would be Loki, which I just recently rewatched season one, like I think we've talked about. And that I thought actually held up really well for the most part from a production value standpoint. But it's just like Andor, it's like the acting feels just a top tier across the board. Like, for instance, in like Obi-Wan, there were several performances in that show where I was like, yikes.
Yep.
And we've Book talked about some of that with The Mandalorian too.
Book of Boba Fett is worse than both of those.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, did you finally watch Book of Boba Fett?
Dude, it's a bad show. Oh, it's no. Rough. It's not rough. Even like, oh, I'm being that guy. I hate being that guy. But I'm like, I don't know if this is even redeemable. Like, I'm not finished. But I cannot find a redeeming quality four episodes in.
Yeah.
Like, I'm literally asking myself, why am I watching this? I think it's not just meh. It's actually bad. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe I'm saying that. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry to everyone out there who's a diehard.
No, I feel like people, that's one that I think a lot of people could get down with, like a take. But where are you in the series? I'm trying to remember.
Episode four. Like,
okay.
So, like, he was just trying to recruit these people in Mos Espa who are like the kids that are ruining the water guy's sail. And he's instead recruiting them to work for him. And I'm like, this entire thing feels pointless and poorly acted. I don't know.
Yeah, it's...
Wow, that's not what I want to talk about today.
Well, but my point being, Andor, I just have been...
Yes.
Really, really impressed with the quality. And I've got to say, like, my buddy, he always says that... I don't know if I've brought this up on the show before. He has kind of three criteria for whether a movie or show works or doesn't work, which I think is, he would say is an oversimplification, but it's still like fascinatingly correct a lot of the times.
Okay.
And he says it really boils down to the writing, the acting, and the music. And obviously there are a lot of other things that have to happen, right? Like we talk about VFX, we talk about cinematography, and I don't think that's minimizing any of that. But I think that he's onto something in that if those three things are excellent, it's going to be a pretty good thing. Like like there may still be some things that keep it from being like epically great, but you're not going to come away from that really like disappointed in the quality of the TV show or movie that you just watched. And I say that to say, I've noticed, like, as much of a film score junkie as I've become, I think that there are even layers of that, right? Like, there's oh, man, I love this music just on its own. Like, I just love this piece. Mm-hmm. And I love, like, the melodies that were chosen. But then there's also, like, the way that the score integrates within a project. And you notice, like, if you ever go watch, like, a Hallmark movie, which Candace just watches a ton of around Christmas, and you see something where there's clearly not much time put into a score, I have to imagine there's, like, an AI chatbot that's, like, putting together a score for Hallmark movies.
Or using my band's music, yeah.
It's like you realize there's no... Candace just came in to note that Hallmark actors get paid hourly, which is a wild fact that we learned recently. My point is, and I'm going to wrap this tangent here, you don't realize how important a score is until you see a scene that otherwise would probably be fine, but the score either isn't there in a meaningful way or just doesn't blend meaningfully. And so as a big Nicholas Britell fan, I do think the score in Andor does a lot of work. Like, I mean, the acting and writing is excellent, but like the score just builds such this like perfect tone. And it's like Loki, what I'm comparing it to, where I think if you pulled the score away from Loki, it would be a wildly different show. Like that adds so much to the whole experience. And so as someone that was really excited to see Britell take on something more in the kind of sci-fi action adventure world, I've been really, really happy about that.
Speaking of score, while you were out, I had a chance to talk with Christoph Beck. So
yeah, you did.
If you want to catch up on that, you can find it on YouTube or just check out last week's episode. I played the whole interview in that episode. But yeah, but also, Robbie, So you have lapped me. I have not finished my phase four rewatch yet. I'm working on it. I'm getting there, but we're going at a much slower pace. I haven't had a rib removed, so that's one difference. But
yeah, that'll do it.
Dude, that I finished Thor Love and Thunder last night, and it's gotten me so, so excited to do a classic rewatch episode of that movie. And it's just like last night, Thor Love and Thunder turned off and Annika and I had maybe a 30-minute conversation just on the phase four stuff in general, like where we were at the time. Uh-huh. And it was so fun. I felt that passion for it again. And I really am looking forward to going back through these phase four projects, which we're going to start next week, actually, with a rewatch episode of WandaVision and start kicking it off. But dude, I told you this on the phone briefly, and we'll get into this so much more fully when it comes to ranking things and when it comes to our rewatch. But I think there's just a lot of things that maybe critics were too harsh on in phase four in general. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to bring those to light and argue for some of these projects. And also a couple of interesting notes in that all the projects have flaws, but I feel like it was a era where we were just so hyper aware of them that like it became the cool thing to talk about those. And we missed a lot of actual good stuff that happened in a ton of those projects. So anyways, I'm excited to bring that to light starting next week with WandaVision.
I'm so excited to watch Love and Thunder and talk about that here specifically in that way, because of all of, maybe unsurprisingly, but this also informs why I've kind of been talking about Love and Thunder lately the way that I have.
Yep.
I kind of kept this ongoing note stock on my phone as I was going through the whole phase four rewatch, you know, preparing for when we would come back and do these episodes. And I had far and away the most written for Love and Thunder, because I think that, I mean, it's just going to be a fascinating discussion in terms of maybe what Taika intended to do, what it became, like the kind of various interpretations of that movie. But I think that when you kind of step back and look at that as a film on its own, it's doing a lot of really interesting things that no other Marvel film has ever done. Now, I think we can still debate whether you like or dislike those, but what I'm really excited about with this rewatch in general, and part of the reason why I kind of blazed through, is I wanted a chance to get through our watch order that we set and see kind of what worked the way I hoped it would and what didn't. And I had kind of previewed a couple of changes I'd wanted to make. And I made a few more, something kind of clicked. Like, I spent a lot of time thinking about why I wasn't like fully satisfied with it and what I was looking for. And I realized that
that's what I love about you.
I gave it too much attention, but then the moment when it finally clicked for me felt worth it. I think that, at least for me personally, the order that I've kind of gotten down now is the most phase four has ever felt like the Infinity Saga did in our watch order for me. It's like, I feel like it's actual. And part of what I mean by that is we started the podcast with the intention of, hey, if you're someone that feels like there are 1,000 Marvel movies coming out all the time, which is hilarious in retrospect, and you haven't been able to keep up.
Little did they know.
Right. Like, this is, you know, this is the way that the story really should unfold. And this way you'll be more hooked in. And we got a lot of positive feedback from that, and people have stuck around. So I assume a certain number of folks that are listening felt that that was the case there. Phase four has been hard on that front in a couple ways. One, because it just ended a couple months ago, and it's hard to really know what the story is when there are still pieces to come out.
It's also less linear.
Yes. Yeah. And so what I've found is there's so many projects too, right? There's so many projects and so many new characters that if you look back at something like even phase three, right? Like, the only straight up new character introduced was Captain Marvel, I think. And in terms of like the first move, like Black Panther had already had a significant part in Civil War by the time we met T'Challa. Mm. Same thing with Spider-Man. And Ant-Man had already had a film. Although, you know, in our watch order, we have Ant-Man there at the top, but of Phase 3. But my point is, like, it's a very, there's never been a Marvel phase that didn't kind of culminate in one big group project where all the threads come together. Like, pretty much everything right. you see in Phase 1 was paid off in Avengers and Age of Ultron and so on. And so I think that the trick here has been finding, like, leaning into some of the mini arcs that we have kind of done in the original order. And what's happened is I've wound up breaking this into really like two halves, but also quarters.
Okay.
Where I think that there's, and I it sounds ridiculous, but I actually think that there's a real clear, like, first half of Phase 4 in the watch order that we've come up with that is kind of broken into like a like subsection A and B, and then a part two, you know, and you could say there's like a C and D. And I think looking at it that way, there are actually some really consistent themes and even just topics that I think are explored. And I think it works remarkably well.
Question, should I edit my current watch order to do this new one? Or do you want me to finish the original Phase 4 watch order first?
I think you should edit, but I think that it's not too late, which is nice.
Okay. So I just watched Thor Love and Thunder.
Right. And so next you should have Loki, right?
Yeah. Keep that the same?
And so, yes. Although one thing to note, Loki is what I would consider to be like the close of that first half, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And we'll talk about this more next week as we kind of get going with WandaVision. But just to set the stage, what I'm looking to do with these rewatches that we did a little bit of back in season one is as we finish, like, we'll kind of set the table for what I'm looking at and talking about here in the WandaVision episode before we get going. And then at the end of each rewatch episode, what I want to do is really set the stage for the next project and kind of try to contextualize and frame that in the story that I think you can find within Phase 4. And my hope is that it will, for the people that have felt like this is a very disconnected phase.
Okay.
My hope is that they'll start to kind of see the through lines and why it makes sense to go from WandaVision to Falcon Winter Soldier and Far From Home. And so I think what we're planning to do, kind of talking about these being split up into little mini chapters or quarters, is this first chunk of our rewatch is going to be that kind of first chapter of Phase 4, which will be those first three projects. And then I think after we get through Guardians, we'll come back with, I guess, Eternals. And kind of go from there. So I'm really genuinely excited about it, as you can tell.
I love it.
We
are like, I think it's okay to say this now. We are around a month out from a soft relaunch of a lot of things and kicking off some new stuff. And I'm super jazzed about that. I mean, you and I have talked off air for months now about kind of reworking the rewatch and what that looks like, starting with next week. That's one aspect. Reworking what Friends from Work Plus looks like and maybe increasing some stuff on that side of things. And again, official announcement coming soon. And then messing with, as a transition, looking into maybe talking about a few other non-Marvel projects as well. And one of the ideas we have, which I think I'm okay with saying, is that we want to try workshopping some of those ideas over on Friends from Work Plus, maybe as soon as the next couple of weeks, to see how that goes before a launch there as well. So I'm excited about the rewatch. I'm also excited about all this stuff we got coming. By the way, on the rewatch front, And again, I'm going to save so many of my thoughts for those projects because I could go for hours on each one. And I'm excited about that. I'm like re-jazzed up on it. I need to update you on my trivia, by the way, because I'm rewatching. Yeah. So I have a lot of answers to give real quick. Because remember last time it was like a trivia marathon. And then I only have one new one because I just had watched Thor Love and Thunder. That's it. Let me quick update people. From Shang-Chi, remember I asked you what brand of car does Razorfish drive? It's an electric BMW iX3.
What's incredible is I just watched Shang-Chi not that long ago, and I still, in this moment, could not answer that.
Where was Ajax's house located in Eternals? And you were correct. It was South Dakota. So that's a fun one. I asked you to tell me how each person dies from Werewolf by Night. And just to be funny, I Googled it, and there's an actual website, I think it's like called Kill Count or something, where they literally just do a kill count of any movie. And this was the first Marvel movie to be featured on Kill Count, Werewolf by Night.
Oh, that's funny.
Because there's enough death. So I thought this was funny. I don't know all these names. I don't even know the names of the hunters. So apparently Leorn has his arm chopped off, shot through the jaw with a crossbow 19 minutes in. This is so funny. Jovan, head burned by a toasty Ted touch 27 minutes in. Guard one, tossed onto neck, 39 minutes in. I didn't count this, but I thought it was funny. Guard number two, werewolf beatdown. Guard number three, werewolf beatdown, both at 39 minutes in. Barrasso, throat slit with sword, 40 minutes in. Guard number four, werewolf massacre. Guard number five, werewolf massacre. Guard number six, werewolf massacre. Guard number seven, werewolf massacre. Guard number eight, werewolf massacre. Azrael, throat slit, sword to skull. That's the one you were thinking of.
Wow.
And then,
oh, wait, there's an Azrael?
Yep. And then...
That's interesting. That's a Batman character.
Oh, interesting. And then Verusa, incinerated by Ted Touch, 45 minutes in. So there you go. I was really just looking for the main hunters, but that's kind of funny. And
that's really funny.
A follow-up to
How
Moon Knight.
How did you find that?
Kill Count. It's like killcount.com or something, or Kill Count on a website. Something like that. They track this stuff.
I love that. I should note, Azrael is, I think, just the angel of death in the Bible, so I shouldn't just attribute that to Batman.
Okay.
As appropriate name, universes.
Then. Yeah. And then Moon Knight, which is maybe the project, Moon Knight and Thor Love and Thunder so far, that I have the most to say, the most to follow up on from our first episodes. Partially because, like, I've always loved WandaVision. I loved it the first time I saw it. I loved it on a rewatch. I've loved it on a fifth rewatch. So I can add stuff there, but it's mainly the same thoughts. Those two projects, I have, like, a lot of takes. So I'm excited about that. But Moon Knight... This is kind of funny. In episode one, what is the name of the other phone call that Steven misses besides Layla? And you guessed Frenchie. I don't know anything about comics. It's Duchamp, which I was now told is Frenchie in the comics.
Wow.
So I mean, technically you're not right, because if you don't know the comics, it's Duchamp, not Frenchie. It doesn't say Frenchie. But I understand with what you're saying, so you get partial credit there.
Q Dashboard Confessional.
So that brings me to my new trivia question. From Thor, Love and Thunder. And Robbie, I'll give you a chance to answer this. I think there's no shot you get this right. Here we go.
Okay.
What specific jersey is Valkyrie wearing at the very end of the film when she's training the kids with swords in New Asgard? Like, everything's been solved. She's wearing a jersey, like a basketball jersey.
I can almost picture it, but no. I was hoping you were going to give me a layup with the Phantom of the Opera sweatshirt, but...
Oh, good call. Annika literally said, Kyle, no one will ever get that. That's not possible. I'm like, well, we'll see.
No, I mean... I know that, like... I mean, there would be a lot of... Here's the thing. There would be a lot of synergy if it were a Minnesota Vikings jersey. But I feel like there's no way that this would be the first time we would be talking about a Minnesota Vikings jersey being featured in a Marvel movie.
If it was like a Kirk Cousins jersey, are you kidding me?
I mean, that would have been in our initial reactions episode. Yeah.
Well, that would have been in episode one, probably. All right. So let me know. Hit me up. Social media at the FFW podcast or on Slack. or on our website, theffwpodcast.com. Or, and don't forget, follow, subscribe, like our page, and check out our YouTube page. Trying to grow that side of it. TikTok, the whole deal, everything. Anywhere you want friends from work, we have it for you.
Yeah.
I was going to say, this is kind of a hodgepodge episode, which is kind of fun. We have obviously just 20 minutes of things we just got into now, but I still want to get into a quick reflection and a ranking of Ant-Man and how that kind of leads into some of my other rankings. Spoiler alert. But also, you had a couple of thoughts on the Oscars too, didn't you? Did you want to get into that real quick?
Yeah.
And well, some MCU news. And some MCU. So we got a lot here.
Yes, yes. Which and I'll take the Oscars here and then give you the MCU news because you've been more I've been off the grid like Nick Fury at the end of Winter Soldier.
Thor has him in his phone.
Okay. So first off, you know, congrats to the Black Panther Wakanda Forever team for winning an Oscar. Now the second MCU film to win an Academy Award, and again, a Black Panther film. So far, that is the only franchise that's been able to kind of break the no Oscar streak. But you know what? I noticed that, and I sort of appreciated this in the midst of all of the, you know, like after Quantumania came out, I feel like, and I don't get bothered by these things because I've seen pieces like this coming out for the past decade almost at various times, but there was a real proliferation of is Marvel done kind of think pieces. And then there were even some quotes that people sent me from Bob Iger talking about reevaluating certain approaches and
we must hold them accountable.
I appreciated that when the costume designer who also won the Oscar for the first film won again. Also, I think people know this. We do these Oscar ballots every year that we take fairly seriously. And I'm always torn between like voting with the head and with the heart. And that I'm like, for instance, I think I voted Black Panther for Best Picture back in the 2019 Oscars, I guess. And I knew that it wasn't probably going to win, but I couldn't not vote for it.
Robbie.
And so this year, I was like, I really thought the best costume was going to go to like Elvis because the Academy always loves like music biopics and
do you
making
pick it
actors
for what you want or what you think is happening? Like ultimately,
I pick
where you
it
land.
Normally for what I think
is going to happen.
It's going to be like the goal is it's like a fantasy league or whatever. Like you're trying to get the most.
I gotcha.
Right. But this is one that I was like, you know what? I don't think it's going to win necessarily, but I think it should win. So I'm going to vote for it. And it won. So I was really excited.
Good.
But when she was in her acceptance speech, she did make a point to thank Kevin Feige personally, which I appreciated just because at this exact moment, there is not a lot of goodwill towards Marvel. I feel like just because people are like, so many people were, well, critically, right? Like, and we're talking about the Oscars, were meh about the last few projects and in some sense. But then also, like, even on the red carpet, I noticed, like, when people saw Jonathan Majors, they would only refer to him as a star of Creed 3. I kept waiting for someone to also just note, like, that he's in Ant-Man Quantumania or in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania or in the MCU or something. And it was like, it felt like this like noticeable omission.
Sure.
And so, I don't know, she could have just focused on the Ryan Coogler led team. And I don't think anybody would have faulted her for that. And I appreciate the fact that she made a point to kind of thank Marvel in general in a room full of people that are probably not,
sure,
that don't always like default to respecting Marvel.
Sure.
But a couple of things I just wanted to note about this year. I was really excited to see Everything Everywhere All at Once win Best Picture.
Avi.
I think that was the favorite going in. It won just a crazy amount of things. I think Candace was saying the other day, it's the first film to have like three different actors win for the same film since like 1977 or something. And so it's...
Which I have thoughts on that real quick.
Well, so okay. So that's what I wanted to get into. And I think I know what you're going to say, but I'll let you maybe kick this off.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, that movie is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. It should have won Best Picture, and it did win Best Picture. And I think that there are a lot of things that other filmmakers can learn from that movie. And if you can handle a little bit of weirdness and like open your mind that direction, like it's, if it's not too quirky for you, I think everyone should watch it because it's pretty freaking good. It was probably my favorite movie I watched this year. I was even asked that on Twitter, and I think that'd be my answer. I feel as strongly about it as I did about Parasite a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, the only caveat I would give there is you walk away from that movie with so many thoughts. You go like, wow, the main two leads are unbelievable. The daughter is unbelievable. The writing is so fun. It's so quirky. It's so imaginative. It's so fresh. It's so new. You walk away with all those thoughts. But like 10th down the list is... Jamie Lee Curtis does a good job, which she does. She does a great job. She's not better than Angela Bassett at her role. And that's the one spot where I'm like, okay, it's cool that they're giving that movie three awards, but like, I can't believe that many people that watched it, their lasting, like lingering impression is like, wow, Jamie Lee Curtis needs to win an award. And that's no offense to her. She's great. She's great.
No. I actually don't, like, I don't think that she could have done any better in that job than she did.
Sure.
Like
I thought
she was funny in all the right times. It, like the moments when it was supposed to be like meaningful between like the scenes between her and Michelle Yeoh and like the alternate universes. I thought those were handled really well. It felt to me like a more of a lifetime achievement award, kind of an Oscar, which you'll see the Academy Awards give out every now and then. But it was just it was a bummer to me too, because this is partly about, there were a couple awards like that I was really disappointed to see them go to Everything Everywhere. And I don't mean that to be blasphemous, because I just said I think it deserved Best Picture. I think it deserved Best Directors, you know, when the Daniels got that. And they also got Best Original Screenplay. And like, but I think that like one thing that sort of irks me about the way the Oscars work sometimes is it's like one film will get so much buzz around it and so much support. And
it's like a snowball.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like on the one hand, you know, we've talked about before how the Oscars should reflect more what a lot of people not in the Academy responded to. And that's why I was so happy that Everything Everywhere got the platform it did. And also happy that Top Gun Maverick and Avatar: Way of Water also got shout outs as kind of blockbuster features.
Did Top Gun win anything?
It won
something.
Sound editing, I think.
Okay.
It won other sound editing or film editing. But
the default award of like, hey, it's a blockbuster and we want to give it to something that we can't give it Best Picture, so here it is.
Right.
Take your sound editing award.
And
not to diminish sound editing. It's literally what I do for my life.
Right. Well, in Way of Water won visual effects, and you know, that's not a huge surprise.
I remember when you said they're fine.
I'm
derailing the conversation. I think the same thing happened that Parasite year for me, where it was like, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was up for Best Picture, Parasite was up for Best Picture, and they were up for Best Actor. And I would say, okay, to me, that's not true. I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood has better performances than any performance in Parasite. But it's not a better movie than Parasite.
Right.
So they should both just be in their separate categories. To me, that's not a Best Picture film.
That's my exact thing is I don't like the bleed over. Like, I wish people would come to each thing. And I get that's a lot to ask, but just it's sort of ridiculous to assume or even to just pretend that because one movie is overall so great that every single component of it is better than the components of every other movie. Like, it's one of the reasons why I was really glad that, and again, I'm not dogging on Everything Everywhere at all, like, but I was glad that it didn't win Best Score, because All Quiet on the Western Front has one of the like freshest, coolest scores, especially for a war movie that I've ever heard. Candace and I both finished it and were like blown away. It's a new composer that I had never heard of.
Okay. You know what? The same thing to me happened. That's why I get on my tangent about, I was thankful that Black Panther won, I think, 2 Oscars. And I was
the original.
Yeah. And I was thankful for that. Don't get me wrong, because of what it means for the platform. But that same year, Infinity War has better special effects than Black Panther. Like, that's not even really debatable.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like they bleed over. They're like, well, we want to give a Marvel film this award, so we better just give it to Black Panther because that's up. Well, it's like, why couldn't it be a thing where Black Panther is nominated for costume because it's better with costumes, and Infinity War was nominated for the special effects. It was the same year.
Yeah. No, exactly. And that's like, I was reading these, you know, like the New York Times and Variety, kind of, these are our Oscar predictions ahead of time. And there were several comments, I think, in the New York Times article about how, you know, well, we think that objectively, you know, this project should win. But because historically this thing that's totally unrelated is always goes to a picture that's also nominated for like best screenplay or best director and then I saw that kind of play out, and yeah, it's just annoying because I think that there's real room. Like, for instance, like Babylon is a movie that did not get good reviews. It's by Damien Chazelle, who is an Oscar winning director or writer. I forget what he won for. I think best director for La La Land, but regardless, a movie that had a lot of hype, had really, really like big name stars in it, including Brad Pitt and Margot Robbie, and just kind of fell flat for a lot of people. But there are also things about that movie that are excellent. Like, the score for Babylon is unsurprisingly really great. The costume design and production design, like, and those were nominated. Yeah. But there was just this sense that it's like, oh, well, but like Babylon, like, was generally not as good of a movie. And so therefore, we're just assuming that should bring the score and all that stuff down. And that's like, and so all that
I'm not nearly as passionate about this as you are, not even close. but I totally understand the bleed over thing is really frustrating because I think it takes away other opportunities to celebrate other people and other films. Like everywhere, go check it out. It's the best movie of the year to me. But by giving it 7 awards, now, like, yeah, all those other people lost their chance, and maybe they did their one aspect better.
I think that there's also a point of kind of diminishing returns, right? Where, like, if you give, like, once you've seen the Daniels come up on stage like 4 times, at some point it's kind of like, okay, like, we get it. This is a good movie. And I love it and I'm excited for them. But then you think, like, man, there are, like, for instance, there are other creators that I think, or other pictures, you know, that some of these awards should have gone to that I think it would have meant a lot to some of those teams. And to kind of tie it back to Wakanda Forever, the two that I was really disappointed in, and maybe the only two of the night, because in general, like I said, not only do I just like the movie Everything Everywhere, I like kind of what it stands for, and I like the kind of movie it is, and I would generally way prefer that get the platform it did. But the two awards that I was bummed about were the Best Supporting Actress, like you said. I just think, I recently rewatched Wakanda Forever, and Angela Bassett's performance is so good. Like, it's at least
more memorable and important to the story than Jamie Lee Curtis's is.
Yeah, I mean, and I just think that...
Sorry to keep comparing, but...
No, I mean, and there were a couple of kind of notes through the night. Whenever Michael B. Jordan came up to present an award, he said, "Hey, Auntie," whenever he saw her in the crowd, and that he or Jonathan Majors even made a comment like, "We see you," at least. Like, this sort of, like, there was this understanding in the room among certain people that she had been robbed. But the other one that really bummed me out, you and I have talked about this, the movie RRR, is one that Candace and I got to go see in theaters in Austin. It's this 3-hour Bollywood epic that wound up being nominated for Best Original Song in the Academy Awards. It was like it's the biggest Bollywood movie like ever, I think. It was a huge, huge hit. It's a really fun movie. I would recommend anyone that like has an interest in, really just, if you're willing to set aside 3 hours, it's really fun. It's a great, like, just kind of epic. It's a musical. It's you know, Bollywood, so there are a lot of dance numbers and things. It's kind of quasi-historical, almost fits, like there's some synergy between that and parts of Miss Marvel, I noticed on my rewatch of that. And the song that they were up for is a really fun, like really catchy kind of pop song. But whenever Rihanna showed up to do her performance of Lift Me Up, and just how emotional that was, and how clearly it was just it felt like it was a moment for the whole room. And I feel like
it had already been decided, though. They couldn't change it right then and there.
No, I know. But I just always find it interesting to see because all the nominees will perform in the award show. And I just like, in the context of the movie on its own, you know, like Ryan Coogler co-wrote that song, the lyrics to the song. Like it feels like this. Yeah. Yeah. And then Gordonson, which is maybe more obvious, co-wrote the music because you kind of have elements of the score in there. But I just think it's such a beautiful song. It's such a beautiful tribute to Chadwick, which is how it was written, that it was one where I was like, I know that I'm biased, but almost on this front, like, I would have rather them not get the best costume this year and instead one of these two categories be the ones that they won, because these are the ones that I was like, yeah, like Wakanda Forever should absolutely win these. And so it just...
There's layers.
I was excited to see the RRR writers. Like, their acceptance speech was great and it meant a lot to them, so I don't want to take that away, but it was just a bummer to me.
Two final thoughts on the Oscars for me. There are layers and levels to this that, I guess maybe barriers that continuously need to be knocked down. So at one point it was like, can a Marvel film or like a huge blockbuster like that even get nominated? And it did. And then it was like, well, can it get nominated for like an important award, like Best Picture? And then it did. And it was like, could they ever win an acting award, which you and I have thought would have been possible a couple of times. And finally, have they? They were nominated now, but still haven't won one for acting.
Yeah.
I think this is
the first nomination too, right?
Yeah. So there's levels to this. Like, eventually we're going to get to a point, I hope, where like a movie like Wakanda Forever isn't just immediately tossed into the category of, well, it can win best costume, which is like amazing thing. But now it's almost like that's the next barrier almost. It's almost like a slight. It's not a slight, but it's like, okay, we're not just going for best costume, guys. We're also like not just making great costumes. We're also trying to act really well, or like have a score that could win, or, you know, like all these people are high level actors, composers, directors, writers, like the highest in the world. And they're all trying to make that film as good as possible. So like there are going to be those barriers broken down eventually. On Everything Everywhere All at Once, I do think it's really important to say how, not only how good that movie is, because I'm not one of these guys that's going to say because the movie was just important, give it all the awards. It is that good, which is why I think it should win a lot of awards. But I also do want to say it is so important. Like, I love, like you said, everything about like what it stands for, because not only for the Asian community, which is a huge deal, especially for my Asian friends, have been posting about this all the time, which is amazing. Not only that, but also like the movie is like weird. It's something they wouldn't normally nominate. It's kind of sci-fi, which is cool for like the sci-fi community. It's different. It's trippy. And then ultimately, and no spoilers here, but like, it's about like family and love. And like, it's not like a super dark story. It's actually the exact opposite. And so like everything about that, I'm all about. So that's why I'm kind of like, I love that it's getting the platform. Like you said, it is that important.
Because
like the typical thing would be, you know, make a really safe, but like super dark with good performances type movie.
You know,
you're picturing exactly what I'm talking about when I say it. So the fact that they came around, did something that unique and that positive in one is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
and you're right. That's also why it's awesome that Maverick was even nominated. I wouldn't say it's the best picture. It's not my favorite movie, but I like that that's a barrier, basically.
And I just to be clear, and I think I've made this clear, but just in case, I do think Everything Everywhere is a significantly better film as a whole than Black Panther Wakanda Forever. So I'm not trying to argue that. I'm just saying I think that there are pieces you can pull out.
100%.
You
know? 100%. I just had to get that caveat because it is that good.
Yes, no, for sure, for sure. And I'm actually, it inspired me to rewatch Swiss Army Man, which is a movie I've talked about before. That was the other big feature presentation from the Daniels, and I'm excited to talk about that soon when we have more time, or maybe on our next Sunday Selections post.
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break. After the break, I want to come back with a little bit of MCU news. And then I want to talk about my third screening of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. I'm going to give 5 minutes of notes. That's it, maximum. You can respond with 5 minutes of your thoughts, and then we will just give it one final ranking, and that's it. If you want to hear more in depth on our Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania stuff, we literally have like 5 episodes at this point you can go back to. We had initial reactions. We had a spoiler-free preview, which is similar to the initial reactions. We've had a chance to talk to Christoph Beck and some comic writers, and we had a whole thing where we talked about were the critics right with these individual concerns. We brought those up, and we talked all like MCU, Kang, timelines. So like everything you may be missing about Quantumania. If you're just now seeing Quantumania, go back, catch up on those episodes, because this ranking is not going to be the entirety of my thoughts on it. But I'm going to give you my final 5 thoughts there. So we'll be right back. We'll do that in a second. What's that? That's right. We have breaking news. MCU breaking news.
Wow.
Kinda breaking news. I'm not a great news guy for this stuff, but there had been rumors of this happening, and I think now it's finally confirmed that Jon Bernthal is returning as the Punisher in Daredevil Born Again. And that's interesting for a couple of reasons. One, if you go back and listen on Friends from Work Plus to our Daredevil season 2 coverage, you will note that I said maybe 10 to 15 times that the best part of season 2 is whenever Punisher and Daredevil are on the screen together. Like, that casting to me really works. He has a strength of that entire project. And I have not sadly seen the Punisher show, but I've heard that the first season, especially, he is good at that role. And I mean, no offense to these actors, but when people are up in arms about the people who played Foggy and Karen, which I think is Deborah Ann Woll and, help me?
Eldon Hansen.
Eldon Hansen, who are very talented actors. I'm not, basically, let me say this. I think Disney's making the right call. I think they're making the right calls. Like, they recast Vanessa with someone, I forget her name. You can look that up while I'm talking. They recast Vanessa. They're bringing back Matthew Murdock, and Kingpin is the same person, Vincent D'Onofrio. And now they're bringing back Jon Bernthal as the Punisher. That's the right call. They're choosing the right people to bring back, in my opinion. Like, Karen and Foggy are talented, but you could replace them and maybe improve the vibe. That is one of the things that is missing in that show. So anyways, for anyone who's freaking out about this, so far, I think they're handling everything how I would do it, or how I think it should be done.
Okay, yeah. So I looked it up. It's Sandrine Holt has been recast as Vanessa. I'm sitting here trying to remember what it is that, like, I know she's been in a ton of things, and I can't put my finger on what I'm, honestly, it might be House of Cards. Old school House of Cards. Anyway, I'm curious whether that is, like, whether there will be another Foggy and Karen, or if we're just seeing the Foggy and Karen characters kind of taken off the board.
Sure.
And I actually think, like, as I was thinking about this, the Daredevil Punisher dynamic is such a fruitful one in the comics that you kind of see them coming back to that again and again. Because it's like Daredevil is, like, there's like the Daredevil Spider-Man dynamic on the one hand. And then there's like the Daredevil Punisher dynamic, and they're almost like the angel and the devil on his shoulder.
Okay.
And that they're both kind of the extreme version of what he's doing on either end. And so I think that there's a lot to be gained from sticking with that. And I think Bernthal's performance, like we said, was so great. But, you know, in the comics, Karen Page has been, she was killed in the 90s in the comics.
Spoiler.
In a scene that they recreated really well. It's one of the first, like, kind of modern, like, fridging incidents, which I noticed in my recent rewatch of She-Hulk. There's, like, a shout-out to that term where a female character is killed in order to like, motivate a male character.
Okay.
And in Daredevil Season 3, I won't talk about it yet because we're still going to do our rewatches there for people that haven't seen it, but they find a way to kind of flip the script with that scene. But Foggy has stuck around in the comics, but I also feel like Foggy is increasingly, like, not useless as a character.
Oh.
But here's the thing. Like,
expendable?
It doesn't feel like he has a real place. And I think I started to feel that in the Daredevil series because of the direction they went by the end of Season 3. It's like, The nature of comics is, like, you look back, the Stan Lee stuff, it all started very kind of slice of life every day, almost everything he did, where it was like he really wanted to focus on the characters being real people. And so you had a big kind of cast of Spider-Man's or Peter Parker's high school friends that they were kind of trying to recreate in the Watts trilogy. And then in Daredevil, you had Nelson and Murdoch as this real central piece, where it's like you see him and Karen and Foggy just interacting every day. Mm-hmm. But as you go further and things escalate, right? And like in the same way that No Way Home kind of had to do away with that dynamic to some degree as he's like growing up and maturing and seeing more. And like, I think with Daredevil, there's also a level of like, does it really make sense for him to still have this part of his life in this,
sure,
in this way, you know, like at some point it starts to, like when you see him in She-Hulk, it kind of makes sense that now he's like
running in the super people circles.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like, and I'm not saying that I don't, like, I still think that we need to have a big role for Matt Murdock. I guess I'm just wondering, like, what would it even look like if we circled back with Karen and Foggy? Like, haven't we already kind of had the same arcs with both of those characters a few times?
Okay. So that remains to be seen, though, if there even is a Foggy and Karen. So we'll find out. All right. Here's how I want to close today's episode. Ranking Quantumania. Can I give you a couple big picture thoughts? Then I'll zoom through my notes. Then I'll give you my ranking. It's going to be a 5-minute rant. Okay.
Yeah. Well, we're doing a group ranking, right?
Oh, joint?
Yeah, this is the first of the new system.
Well, we
haven't
talked about it. Oh, you want to work through it? You want to work through it. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you where I'm at then, and then you can tell me if you think I'm crazy.
Okay.
Okay, so first thing I want to say really quickly, as I've been going through Phase 4 and rewatching it all, it's been fascinating to see how my gut reaction to so many of the projects is to put them in the exact same spot, Robbie.
Mm-hmm.
There is, in my opinion, No Way Home, which is removed from the pack for the better. Like, it is like a top 5 film for me that they've ever made. And there's mm-hmm. Eternals, which I think is separated from the pack in a bad way on the bottom end. But I was saying to Annika last night, like, every other film since Endgame falls into this same category that is hard to rank. Black Widow, Far From Home, Love and Thunder, Multiverse of Madness, and now Quantumania, where mm-hmm. I would say they're all really good. And I think that critically people were too harsh on them a lot of the times, because I think, you mm-hmm. know, we've talked about this so much, like expectations are different. What people are looking from the MCU, like looking for from the MCU is different. All these reasons that we'll get into later, especially when we're going through them on a rewatch and more specifically to each film. Okay. But on a big picture level, I think they were unfair in certain cases. but all of which, oh, and by the way, and all of which are better than the vast majority of all my other films that I watched in ranking. Like, I kind of look at it as like Age of Ultron being the dividing line for me. Is Thor Love and Thunder better than Age of Ultron? And I think I look at it and I go, I think it is. They all are in this category where it's like, they're not bad. Hmm. So you don't put them in the bottom half, but they're maybe not the very, very elite. And that led me to think, I think there are, and maybe you can react to this, there are like 10 to 12, I think maybe 11 is the sweet spot, films in the MCU that are virtually flawless, where I would say they're just, yeah, movies. Then there's this chunk that I have to say, this is most of phase four, is a yeah, but. And that's the difference for me, which is like every project in phase four has a, holy crap, it's so good here, but let me give you a tiny disclaimer on the visuals, or let me give you a tiny disclaimer on the pacing, or just, yeah, but I don't love this decision. Whereas like the top 10 for me, I virtually don't have that. There's tiny little things, but like Endgame, Infinity War, No Way Home, Guardians, Ragnarok. I don't have to give any disclaimer to somebody of like, this is not Marvel at their best, but it's really good.
Right, right.
And so that's kind of my framing of this all I've realized. The second thing is I now have a critic list and a preference list. I don't have one list for myself. And that's interesting because one, I'm not done with my lists yet. So the numbers are going to be a little off because I'm not through my rewatch and I'm saving this fresh list for when I finish my rewatch. So these numbers are a little bit off. So I can give you a gauge of where I think this sits, but it's not exactly where it's going to finish. Does that make sense? Because I still have to fill in some of those other gaps. But also it's led me to really think about critically, can I see what everybody is saying? Can I use my own opinion on just a critical perspective, a movie-making perspective, and put a number to it? And then preference-wise, like if I just don't care, can I just do that as well? And it's been a fascinating exercise. And that's why, again, I want to go project by project, not today. With Ant-Man specifically, I watched it a third time. And I had three really, really separate watches. One, I watched it in LA with you, with critics, totally different experience. The second time, watched it just with fans and my wife, totally different. Third time, watch it at 1:20 on a Monday with nobody in the theater, myself, by myself. Wow. And by the way, I watched Screen X. Have you ever heard of that from Regal?
It's where they project, but I don't know that I've done it.
They project on the side walls. It's like a box.
Oh, that's cool. Did you like it?
I think I did kind of like it. I didn't leave like going like, that's the future of cinema, but it was kind of fun. Like it was kind of cool.
I don't know if they have one in Austin. I know they have one in Houston, and I remember considering trying to see No Way Home in that format at one point. But that's good to know. I might have to check that out.
So here we go. In closing, rapid fire. This is the stuff that I felt like I needed to type down when I was in the theater.
Okay.
Some of the blue screen stuff isn't good. It isn't. Mm-hmm. Some of the blue screen stuff is just not good. And specifically, it really only shows up in the first half of the film. I've said that a lot on this podcast already, but for whatever reason, once they land on Kang's headquarters, it looks great. But some of the early blue screen sets are just not finished, and it gets a lot better. That led me to, when I was watching, again, a different tangent, when I was watching Moon Knight Episode 4, one of the things I think Marvel has to do a better job of in Phase 5 and 6 is just please film more on location. Film more on location. Not the sets that you build in the backyard, which are also awesome, but when possible, go on location. It is one of the reasons why Eternals laps some of these movies visually, I think, because Chloe took them to locations. Please do that. Please do that more. Even with the Quantum Realm, find a spot to use and then CGI from there, please. I think that would help with a lot of this, okay? That's my first thought. However, when we say the visuals are bad, I have to reiterate this. The imagination, the costumes, the ships, the design of those sets is elite. Elite. Elite in the imagination department. So I can't just say, visuals are good or bad. I have to say, like, the blue screen work is like a 6 out of 10 for me, but the visual imagination is like a 9.5 out of 10 for me, to where I would say there's very little that is better. So weird mixed feelings on the visuals. I still personally think MODOK is super funny, and I'm totally fine personally with that character never being serious. Despite what Jackson and Colin said last week, I don't need MODOK to ever be serious. I've never read a comic in my life. Sure, so the fact that a guy floating as a giant head shows up, if they were trying to treat that seriously, I'd be like, this is stupid. This is dumb.
Yeah.
As a just movie maker, sorry, movie watcher, I don't need him to be serious. It's funny to me. It's so funny, and it still is funny to me. So I'm not going to change my opinion on that. The music is really good. I don't think it's Christoph Beck's best work ever. Like, WandaVision for me is still like the best he's ever done. Mm-hmm. And by the way, my daughter's getting into Frozen. His music on Frozen's really good too. Not the song, but the actual score.
Right, right.
The songs are good too. But anyways, the music is really, really good. So the music's like an 8 out of 10 for me. Very good. Better than a lot of other MCU projects, in my opinion. I think the acting is good across the board. I'm watching the film going, across the board, the acting is good. I disagree with critics that say, like, certain people didn't want to be there, phoned it in. Sorry, this tangent's getting really long. I think it's good. It's not the best in the MCU. There's no one performance that's the best. It's not even maybe top tier, but it's good. It's like a 7 out of 10. It's still really fun. It's still really fun, and I think people miss that fun and excitement and, like, a positive story about family. Those are emotions that also need to be represented in film, not just darkness and death and stuff. So I think people forget that sometimes too. And making a sincere film like this is hard to do. And so sometimes it falls on its face and it can be a little Spy Kids-ish. Sure. But it also is hard to make a really sincere film. And I still just have a lot of fun with it. I laughed out loud at the line from MODOK when he goes, "I became the ultimate weapon." And Scott goes, That's what this is? Funny to me. I didn't realize that Dave Dastmalchian, how do you say that? Oh my goodness.
Yes, yeah.
He's the voice of the holes guy. I didn't know that. So the character who is the, I have holes.
Right.
Veb?
Yeah. Sorry. But the character from that he played in the first two films was Kurt, right?
He is back here as that voice. That's kind of funny. One thing that I think is important to remember, again, I'm viewing this movie from, I don't view the first two Ant-Man films as sacred ground. Remember? I'm watching it going like, yeah, this is not at all like the first two Ant-Mans, but that's okay for me. In fact, that's better for me because those movies are fine to me. Some people who hold that on sacred ground are going to be burned by that. But for me, I'm like, I like the fun switch up. Last few things. The last fight scene is so legit. So legit. From the time that the ants show up and then the battle of Kang and Scott, so cool.
Yeah.
I freaking love that ending. Reminder, some Slack people posted this. When people are mad about the Wasp not being a part of it, reminder, it's Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's not Scott and Hope. And there are two Ant-Mans and two Wasps in this case. And so to the people who are mad about a lack of Wasp, I think the title can also represent Janet.
That's a really good point.
And we talked about that, how it's kind of a final story for Janet as Wasp and Hank as Ant-Man as well. So,
and Beck talked about how each of them had their own themes, like, from the beginning. So he, you know, that's always been kind of baked into the franchise.
Last thing, and I'm losing my voice. I'm so passionate about this. The last line that Scott says is like, oh no, everyone would die. Or Scott says, Kang says, everyone would die if he gets out. And that's how the movie closes. And I was thinking, like, I guess he's just meaning Kang, that it's the he who remains thing, right? That's what he means. That, like, if Kang gets out, he will ultimately stop the multiversal war by wrangling one timeline, which is why Scott is panicking, because he's saying everyone else would die, meaning all the other multiverses. Do you follow? Is that what he means by that? Because, like, that's like the fundamental thing that Kang keeps saying is, like, if I get out, basically you don't want to know what happens at the end because it's bad. But also, if he gets out, he'll destroy so many different people.
Yeah. So my take on that, like, that end speech with Scott saying, well, you know, like, I saved the day because Kang was going to get out and, you know, commit endless genocides, and I stopped that, and that's good. But then he says, but wait, didn't he say that if he didn't get out, then all of this really bad stuff was going to come? And if he didn't get out, then did I actually do something really bad?
So if he doesn't get out, there will be a multiversal war amongst all the other versions of Kang, correct?
Yes. I think so. Although that kind of goes back to our episode a couple weeks ago. But
if he does get out, the 616 universe is good to go, but all the other universes are screwed.
I think that's right, because he makes a point to say to Janet, like,
yeah, not your daughter. Not yours. She'll be fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Again, I'm not finished. I'm only through Thor: Love and Thunder on my rewatch, so there's a few movies missing here. Weighing in the critics side of things, it has 47% Rotten Tomatoes. For me, I think even critically, that's influenced. So even critically, I think you should say it's like 68 to 70%. Critically. Or maybe even higher. I think 47 is just egregious, and some people are fed up with Marvel and like, or missed expectations. I don't think that's a fair viewing of the movie. So taking that into account, plus what I kind of think, I currently have Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania at 18th on my list, critically.
Yeah.
Preference-wise, I have it at 11th on my list. I watched it a third time, and I just like it a lot. I like it a lot. Nice. I think I like it more than Thor: Love and Thunder and Black Widow, which are two movies that I really like.
Yeah.
So, I'll share these online, especially when we finish. But currently, Robbie, listen to my preference rating currently. Okay? And then I'll let you take over. I just talked for 15 minutes, so you're up after this. Here's my current preference, and I'm not done, so it's not complete. Infinity War, 1. Endgame, Civil War, Guardians, Ragnarok, 5. That's the first 5.
Okay.
Age of Ultron. So you have Age of Ultron, 6.
Wait, was No Way Home 4?
I haven't got there yet. Says I'm saying on the watch order.
Wow. Oh, I see. No.
I'm saying like I'll put No Way Home above that, I think. But I haven't.
Right.
In my rewatch, I haven't got to the point where I'm ranking it yet.
Gotcha.
So when I get there, I anticipate No Way Home being the only movie that breaks into that.
Top right.
Six. Age of Ultron 6. That's crazy.
Wow. I love that.
The Avengers 7. Iron Man 8. Far From Home 9. Homecoming 10. So,
wow.
I think I'd rather watch Far From Home again, okay? Quantumania, 11. Love and Thunder, 12. Black Widow, 13. Iron Man 2, 14.
Wow, I love this.
Winter Soldier, 15. So, Iron Man 2, I'd rather watch right now over Winter Soldier, if you told me.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge Russo's fan. Can't be a bigger fan. Love it. You're going to hate this now. Doctor Strange, 16. Ant-Man, 17. Ant-Man the Wasp, 18. Black Panther, 19. Shang-Chi, 20.
Wow.
Thor Dark World, Iron Man 3, Captain America 1, Eternals, Captain Marvel, Thor, Guardians 2, Incredible Hulk.
Wow, some hot takes in there. I love it.
It's preference. It's not a take. It's not a take. It's a preference. I'm just telling you what I like to watch or not.
No, that's the whole point of this.
Yeah,
I love it.
The critic list is different. It's different. By the way, I can't. I want to talk about this so bad, but the rewatch stuff, I have a yeah, but for each film. Shang-Chi, I can't wait to talk about. Because, critically, well done. But I just don't like watching it very much. I have it at 20th on my preference. I can't explain it. Black Widow, when I'm watching it, I never get distracted. It's so easy for me to stay locked into that.
Yeah.
Shang-Chi, I don't want to use the B word of B-O-R-E-D. But I just check out. I don't know. It's hard to explain. So I have something like that for each one. My other hot take, Moon Knight is virtually perfect. If they had just gotten the visual things fixed, it'd be my number one. And Moon Knight would be one of the best things they've ever made if they had just fixed some of the visual stuff. That's the kind of stuff I want to get into. I'm so excited.
Yeah, see,
I'll let you talk.
It's so funny because I don't want to get into any of this now, but I'm realizing from some of the brief comments we've made here and off air that you and I have both had a lot of things have moved around on this last rewatch, at least in increments. And I kind of love it because I think that it'll be fun as we go through this to see you know, what has and hasn't shifted from kind of our initial assessments. Because like there are a few projects that I think went down a couple notches, and there are a few that I think went up considerably for me. And so I think it's going to be, but I don't think that they're all the same. And I think in some, they may be inverse, and I kind of love that. So yeah, I think that that's what's fun about the preference thing is you don't have to really back it up because it's just what you prefer. Like you don't have to explain why you prefer it. It's just
Age of Ultron is not doing anything revolutionary, but I never would turn someone down who wants to put it on ever.
Oh yeah. Agreed.
Okay. So dude, this is the kind of stuff we're going to get into. I love it.
Right.
Starting next week. But okay. In closing, any final thoughts on Ant-Man? I know because your surgery, I'm sure you haven't had a chance to watch it a third time, which is the one thing you wanted to do before ranking it because you had the two polar opposite watches.
You know, well, one second. I'm going to get my ice pack here.
I'm going to keep this in because Robbie is so injured. He's literally getting an ice pack, which I love. I'll buy some time. Before Robbie gets back, thank you guys for listening. Check out all of our stuff, please. Patreon, Friends From Work Plus. You can subscribe to Friends From Work Plus on Apple, as well as a few other places coming up soon. On Patreon, obviously, check out our YouTube channel. Check out our podcast on Apple, Spotify. Leave us a review and message us on social media, the FFWpodcast.com.
Wow, well done. Okay. Sorry about that. Also, if you have to have an ice pack...
For those who are just listening, it's a Captain America ice pack. That's insane.
So,
final thoughts.
Yes. Here's the fun thing. We have not gotten to talk about this in all the craziness. I actually did get to see it a third time.
Oh.
Like 2 days before the surgery. So I think it was right after we maybe recorded last since then I did get to see it a final time.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
And I will say, because I think one of the things that I want us to use these reflection episodes for moving forward, and that's why I'm kind of glad you opened it like you did, is to talk about how things shift on different watches. I had a much, much, much better viewing experience on the third time than the second time. I felt like the second time I'm grateful for in a way because... It's like I saw that movie the way that critics see it. Mm-hmm. I was worried that I wasn't going to be able to like unsee it. But then, you know, like I came back in and Candace went with me again. And she also thought it was significantly better. She still is not a huge fan of the movie. But she thought that it was a lot better.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. I think once I was kind of... It was weird. Like, I think we already kind of talked about a lot of things I think went into that second viewing. And again, I don't really want to dismiss that second viewing because I think that that's the experience a lot of folks have had. But it's like, once I just got in the headspace of, like you're saying, kind of enjoying it, it wasn't even I'm just going to enjoy this and kind of pretend it's not bad sort of thing. Like, I don't want to give that sense because that's not what I was doing. Like, I just was like, okay, I'm just going to kind of try to come back at this fresh. And... yeah, like I still think like the opening, all the San Francisco stuff, I think is really, really good. And I would agree that probably the weakest portion is the early part of them in the quantum realm.
Once
kind of the
Scott,
weakest in several ways.
Once Scott has to rescue the core.
Yeah.
I think the whole movie is like picks up.
Yeah. Like there are a couple things I noticed like on the editing front that I thought were interesting, like I saw an article several weeks ago about how this movie was kind of edited differently than any other Marvel movie, where I think Peyton Reed like gave the editors or the editing room even greater control. Like I think I saw a headline that said it was like a director's cut from the editing room. But I noticed like, and I'm still not sure if I like this or not. Like, the cuts back and forth throughout a lot of those early portions, whenever you're getting like, here's a little bit of Scott and Cassie and here's a little bit of Janet and Hank and Hope. It's like, really kind of like a minute here, a minute there, a minute here, a minute there. Like it's almost like Infinity War, except in Infinity War, you're going across, you know, like a ton of different mm-hmm. character groups. And so it feels a little bit more.
It's like checking in each group.
Yeah. Whereas here, when it's just two, it kind of like, it, like, I feel like it's something that, for instance, that Lord of the Rings did really well is figuring out kind of the right amount of time to spend when you're checking in with like the Aragorn character pieces and then going back to like Frodo and Sam. I did feel like there was a little bit of like frantic back and forth in those early parts, which I think make it maybe hard to settle into for some people. Again, I think on the first watch, it didn't bother me because I was so in it and just wanting to see kind of what happened. But just a couple of things like that. You covered some of the other kind of concerns I would have. But largely, I was really, really happy with the third viewing. I think there are things about that movie that that I think are really well done. Like I almost like to kind of go all the way back to our Oscars combo. It's so hard to kind of look at it just as a sum of its parts because the easy thing would just to be to say like, oh, you know, it's fine. It's a fine Marvel movie, and that's probably true, I guess, if you average a lot of different things out, but there are also parts of it that I think are really great. Like, I really love everything. Personally, I really love everything about the introduction of Kang, from Major's performance to, like, the opening, like, the very opening scene with him and Janet, I think is a really cool way to introduce a new villain. And so, yeah, I don't know. As I've sat with it, I'm more and more grateful that you and I got the opportunity to see it and respond to it in full in that first initial reactions episode without knowing what we were doing, like how this movie, like we were not trying to be defenders of this movie. Right. Like we didn't, at the time, right. We didn't know that we had to be.
It's telling, right? And it's informative in the same way your second viewing was informative of the critics. Like
right.
That first viewing, for whatever reason, that still happened too. So it's weird. You had like a here, then a down here, and then like a back in the middle type thing.
Yeah, middle, but towards the top, I would say. And so, and the other kind of...
Look at, dude, like the first viewing was the audience score, right? The second viewing was the critic score. And then the third viewing is like where we're going to land, which is like somewhere in here.
I think what's also fascinating to me as you're kind of talking about the Phase 4 retrospective that we'll get into more in this coming rewatch, there was a... I remember like talking about these kind of think pieces right when Quantumania came out. There were some things online about like, well, you know, surely Marvel is going to kind of realize they need to change course. And I saw some things like that again, like I was talking about with some of the Bob Iger quotes. But, you know, even that, I find.
Oh, boy. We're going to get into that more.
No. Yeah, I'm not going all the way down the road. My point there is just everyone's highlighting different things. You know, like I saw like the Bob Iger quote that had been pulled out was like, well, you know, maybe some characters don't need a third or fourth movie. Yeah,
I know. Even that from Bob Iger is stupid. It's stupid to say that. It's about the stories, not about if you need new characters or not.
Well, and it's funny because I saw someone talking about.
Yeah, so now the sequels are the problem, Bob?
Well, like, for instance, like, the two worst-reviewed movies from Marvel, critically, are Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, and Eternals. And those movies, within the Marvel, like, universe, could not be more different.
Right, and so there's not, like a formula that is,
Like it's weird because it's like if you would say, oh, well, this is they're too obsessed with jokes and goofiness and they need to let it breathe and not be so concerned with like introducing the next step. Okay, well then like here's Eternals. Literally that. Like
part of me thinks like we're gonna get like an incredible spy thriller in like New World Order or Secret Invasion. And then let's just see what the commentary is. If it's done really well, is the commentary gonna be They're back to like the safe hits. Right. It's the same formula. It's boring. So like, I don't know, man.
Which is what, you know, Black Widow was in large part.
Exactly.
And so, but the reason I say that is like, for instance, look, like obviously Iger is referencing their Quantumania and Love and Thunder. And because those are the only characters that have gotten third or he's definitely not saying they shouldn't have made No Way Home. And yeah, so,
exactly. So even that's not the formula, Bob. Like right, that's not the right. one factor.
Right. Or Civil
that's
War.
What I'm saying.
You know, like yeah, it's or Ragnarok, you know, as the third. And so I think it's just what I
and by the way, a year ago, everyone was crushing Marvel for too many new characters. We don't know right. Shang-Chi. We don't know Moon Knight. We don't know Ms. Marvel. So now Bob's right. come around saying, well, we need to do more new characters and less sequels.
Right.
No, it's like some fans are looking for the exact opposite.
I think it's just, I guess two things, and then we can rank this. But the whole reason I say all that is because, like, just looking at those movies in particular, if you're looking at Quantumania and Love and Thunder, those are movies that I have heard so many people rip apart, particularly like on the critic side. Oh. But also, those are movies that anecdotally I've heard people love.
Like, I know. Like me, so the first time.
Well, it's like Love and Thunder even. Yep. Like the other night, I was talking to a friend of mine that hated Quantumania, loved Love and Thunder, right?
Wait, hold on. That doesn't make sense because to me, those are like the parallels.
Yeah, but no, that's what I'm saying. I just don't really think that there's a lot to be said. And this is maybe moving into my second point. Like, you know, we've talked about the audience score of Quantumania and it's like, I think that
the audience score of Quantumania is higher than the audience score of Love and Thunder, but the critic score of Love and Thunder is higher right. than the, you know what I'm saying? Right. That's interesting though, too.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that I keep going back to the Feige interview we talked about a couple weeks ago. And, mm-hmm. and this is my second and kind of final point here, where he said that the MCU is eventually going to need to move into a space more like Marvel Comics, which starts to look like, okay, like, so you're not really into the cosmic thread of the MCU. Well, that's okay, because we're going to have, like, Thunderbolts and Captain America New World Order and this stuff for you. And, you know, maybe you're not into, like, the heavier spy thriller stuff. Well, then we're going to have, like, funnier, more lighthearted things. Like, and I think that we have been so trained for so long in the MCU for every single chapter to be essential. Mm-hmm. And I still think that for hardcore fans, they will be like, they will all pay off. They'll give you something. But I also think that we can't like the thing has to evolve, right? Like it's what I'm saying with like the difference between like early Stan Lee Daredevil and current Daredevil. Like it's got to, it has to turn into something else. And I think that what I've realized even in the Phase 4 rewatch is like, I think that there will come a time where it will be much more fruitful to do a like thematic rewatch of certain films and projects than it will be to try to do the whole thing.
Interesting.
Like, I think, and again, we were about to do a rewatch of all of Phase 4. I still, like, I just did that and had a lot of fun.
Right, it'd be like,
to be gained, but
go watch Infinity Saga. Great, you love that. But then starting with Phase 4, you might be like, watch the cosmic stuff if you like space right. stories.
Right.
Well, like, you can watch like, Love and Thunder, and you can watch the New Guardians and the Holiday Special and watch Quantumania yeah. even, and then you get, like, a sci-fi thing.
It starts to look even like a...
Or watch Black Widow and Secret Invasion and New World Order. Like,
yeah.
watch that.
Well, it's like a mixtape almost. It's like it now gives you enough room to kind of put together the MCU that you like. And I think
interesting. That's good and bad. Yep. It's going to be less accessible to all.
Yeah. Like, but I think it is interesting to me that so many... Like, we've talked about the different polarizing things and whatever, but it's just... I feel like... So much of the Infinity Saga, people were just like, yeah. Like obviously Marvel fans were like really into, like when Civil War came out, we were like freaking out about it. But non-Marvel fans, when they saw Civil War, they were like, yeah, that's a good movie. but they weren't like I didn't see a ton of people like lose their minds over it. Whereas like there are some projects from phase four that the vast majority of people were not as much into, or maybe like didn't capture, like it definitely didn't get the critical response that something like Civil War did, but certain people like loved it, you know, like,
sure. I guess.
So I don't know. I think that's just going to be, I think we need to, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it turns into something that is more focused like it was. I think that there are other, like, I meant to have this conversation today. I'm just realizing I wrote in my notes and now we've gone too long, but we'll need to talk at some point about, I think that there are a lot of interesting differences between the kind of pre and post in-game world. And I think that it's going to be interesting to dig into like whether those are, you know, which of those are positives and negatives, like what I'm saying with there being kind of mini arcs, but also like phase four is the first time we've had so many or just really any projects that are so singularly written or directed in that like if you look back at the biggest hits teams of the Infinity Saga, yeah, you had Marcus McFeely for a lot of the like greatest hits. But even the others, like I don't think that there, I think Joss Whedon on Age of Ultron is maybe the only other like single credited writer that I can think of. Okay. And Jon Favreau from the first Iron Man. But we've talked about how that script was kind of a unique thing. Whereas now we've got something like Multiverse of Madness and like Quantumania that are written by one person. And in some ways that's like for the longest time, the criticism was Marvel does things by creative committee almost. And they feel manufactured and so anyway, I don't want to talk about all this now, but I'm just saying to kind of set the table for what's coming. I think there are a lot of differences. I think some of them are probably necessary, and whether you want to characterize them as growing pains or just like kind of a, you know, the beginnings of some sort of metamorphosis, I think that it's, I don't fault them for being willing to maybe play with the formulas.
Okay. And so all that being said, that's what's insane about on our joint rankings, movies 12 through 17 are all post-Endgame projects. And it has become the bane of my existence to try to sort out from a critical perspective, weighing in my preference, because that's what this is.
Mm-hmm.
I can't figure out the order of these five. And I hate that I have a podcast where I'm supposed to know that, but I don't. I don't know it. So like, I guess let's start here real quick. Would you agree that Quantumania isn't a top 11, like perfect film? Like it's not better than The Avengers, Iron Man, Black Panther, Winter Soldier, etc.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree.
So it's gotta be below that. And mm-hmm. would you agree that if I use the line of demarcation as Avengers Age of Ultron at 18, do you think Quantumania is better than Age of Ultron? Again, it's impossible, but I do personally. That's where the joint ranking thing is going to be tough.
Yeah, I don't.
What about Doctor Strange? That's what we have at 19.
Yeah, I think I would see this.
Currently, with the post-Endgame stuff, we go 12 Wakanda Forever, 13 Shang-Chi, 14 Black Widow, 15 Far From Home, 16 Love and Thunder, 17 Multiverse of Madness. This is where like maybe the joint ranking stuff should happen off air, because
I like this though.
So for me, I think I would go 14 ahead of all those phase four things except for Wakanda Forever and Shang-Chi.
Yeah.
Like Black Widow has the third act that people really push back on.
Uh-huh.
Far From Home, I love, as you know from my thing, but...
Yeah. I think I would probably put this...
Is it better than...
Because we're doing critically here.
It's a melting pot of everything. Like, is it better than Love and Thunder? It's impossible to answer. That's it.
Yeah. I think for me, it is certainly like just because maybe this is easier for me starting at the bottom. It's certainly better. I like it more than the other two Ant-Man films.
Absolutely. But we have that at 21 and 23. And you said it was towards the top a second ago.
Well, I said it was towards the top, like I said it towards the top. If you were saying like the top was my first viewing and the bottom was my second viewing, I was saying it was towards the top, towards my first viewing, in terms of like how I felt about it on my third. But I think, I'm looking at it like critically. I think that it is, I think it's right for me. It's right in the like Iron Man 3, Doctor Strange area, which is so different than how I felt on the first viewing. But I think just kind of with more context now, preference wise, I think this is one that I'll probably end up returning to a good bit, and that would be a different conversation. But I just think that there are some things that like,
so Age of Ultron at 18 above or below?
I think Age of Ultron above.
Wow.
But see, I don't know if I can long agree thought with Age this, of but... Ultron is. I've thought Age of Ultron is a. Is.
So, I think Age so of 19. Is a good
movie. I think I feel. Yeah, I feel good about 19.
Well.
Now, look, I mean, we're going to fight
for the
I think
for the record, I would obviously go higher. I went
what
critically.
What was your ranking that you were prepared to.
Well,
to
you know. Again, I wasn't doing the joint thing yet. I didn't know we were doing that on air. But
I mean, but what was your. What was your. Like, what were you going to say your ranking was if you just did it on your
own? I just read them all, but, you know, preference for me is going to be like 12, I think, because it's 11 now, but I think No Way Home is better. So No Way Home is going to go ahead of it. So I think it's going to be 12, preference. And I think I had it, so I guess, yeah, I had it as 18, I think, critically, which with No Way Home above, depends on how I land on a couple of the other films, like Multiverse of Madness. It's going to be about the same range. Yeah, 18 or 19, maybe 20.
So, I think we're on the same
But
on
preference
the same
wise, that's a huge gap for me, but whatever.
But I feel like the whole point of the joint list is to, like, for me at least, and I know you're keeping both, like, individually as well, like, I'm kind of just creating my personal list into a straight preference list. Because,
okay. So we're going to.
And then I'm treating this as where I kind of make my critical analysis.
Okay, so we're going 19 just after Avengers Age of Ultron ahead of Doctor Strange. That's what I don't think I'd go below Doctor Strange. I don't think that's fair.
No, I think that feels about right. I think that.
So to me, that's like the very, that's like the middle of tier two.
Yeah. Is that above that? We probably have that above First Avenger.
Yes. 20.
I won't fight you on that, but you know that I want to. See, this is where we make our compromises.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Oh God. I hate this. I hate it.
You hate that we have to do this, or you hate that we have to do it on the podcast?
Both. yeah, it's a weird one. The critic score and audience score tells you enough. It's like it's gonna always be a weird one. And for me, I lean on this movie. I typically lean critic in movies. I lean audience on this, where it's like, I had so much fun. I'm going to leave it at like 12 or 13. If you asked me to rewatch all these moves, I would definitely rewatch Quantumania for me over Multiverse of Madness. Not even a question. I would watch it over Doctor Strange, over all those. So again, not over Age of Ultron because that's sixth. But it's just,
yeah,
that's what it is. So, okay, officially, Friends from Work, as of right now, is going to slate this at 19th overall and TBD.
Yeah, and I think my preference, I'll like give a final, I need to actually sort my entire ranking more in that way, but I think I would land closest to where you are. I would probably put, I would probably differ with you over a few things. Like, I think I like Multiverse of Madness more than you do. But yeah, I think like it would certainly be higher for me. Like I said, I think this is one that I'll revisit more. But will normally what I think I would like to do is give our joint ranking like this, and then also both do preference things. And I'm just realizing here that I was not prepared to do that. But I think moving forward, and then that way we can kind of, because I think that we're going to have more of a divide on preference, I think, than we are critically, because I think we, you know, we look at these things similarly in terms of the mechanics or like what you were saying from the movie making perspective. But there are some that like Black Panther or like the first two Captain America movies that I just enjoy revisiting a lot more than you do. Even though I think we're not that far apart in terms of some of the mechanics behind those movies.
Yeah, right.
So I think this is fun. I also think this is like this joint ranking is my way of escaping having to actually make my own single ranking, which has been one of the
that's
hardest
how you copped
parts
out
of this podcast.
This was fun. This was longer and more fun than I thought it was going to be.
That's what she said.
I can't tell you how excited we are for the next era of Friends from Work. And it's all good. It's not bad. But I know that, like, let me put it this way. Change is coming a little bit. And we think for the much better. But don't freak out. Open your mind. We're excited about a few new things. As far as like how we deliver the podcast, where you can get it, what it looks like. And then like starting next week, a rewatch episode will be really fun to go back to. Mm-hmm. And we're flirting with a few other ways to stay connected, et cetera. So I'm only teasing that now because we haven't hammered out all of the details. It's not 100% final. But like I said, before Guardians of the Galaxy, Robbie and I are trying to put together a very specific plan of how we see the rest of the year going, and then, you know, hopefully many years after that. So it's not bad also, though. I'm so excited. I made that sound like it was a bad thing. I'm pumped about what is going to happen. So
no, yeah, there's no loss of anything that we've been doing. We're just, if anything, we're tightening certain things and adding some more features that I think just we, especially on the Friends from Work Plus side, I've just been so grateful for the support of a lot of our patrons that have kind of been there since day one. And I think that has been such a fun space to explore things and will kind of continue to be a fun testing ground. And that's something that we're going to be kind of highlighting and making use of more. But also, we have kind of, after doing that for, you know, a year and change, I think have really figured out what we want that to look like. And I'm really excited about kind of how that format is shaping up. So I think that, and then some other things that we've talked about here and there that are just going to hopefully sort of, like, I think on the Friends from Work Plus side, like maybe we've said before, we're going to be deepening the MCU coverage in ways that I've kind of long been excited to do. You have been too. And
it's then, Friends from Work Plus 2.0, kind of.
Yes. Yeah. And then on the main feed, we're going to kind of be expanding things outward too. And so
that's true.
I think we're
deeper in one direction, wider in the other direction.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So I think that's maybe the best way to think about it. But the last thing for me for this episode would just be if you are interested, I've gotten really excited about what this Phase 4 rewatch will look like.
Oh yeah,
And even about kind of the way we're breaking it up, I think that there's some merit in separating some of these chapters like this. But if you want to join in that with us, kind of old school style, mm-hmm. You know, take the week and see if you can watch through some or all of WandaVision. We'll be, like we said, we'll be doing WandaVision, Falcon Winter Soldier, and then Far From Home. So if you kind of get ahead from us,
likely the next 3 weeks, by the way. So
yes. Yeah. So that's kind of the next slate. So if you find yourself wanting an MCU rewatch, I think WandaVision's a pretty easy one to pop on. So, otherwise, you know, you've probably seen it if you're listening to this podcast. So you can also just listen to us talk about it next week without watching. But if you want to follow along, there's the schedule.
Lots of announcements to come, official announcements. That is, we love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week here on Friends from Work.